ICEA Gear has outfitted over 10,000 bow hunters across the country, and we're continuing to raise the bar when it comes to bow hunting camo. New for the 23 season, we introduce our never-before-seen panel fabric system designed to be dead quiet, along with our patent-pending bow hunting collar. ICEA Gear. Features and function built for bow hunters by bow hunters. Learn more at asiogear.com.
Welcome to Bear Bow Hunter Podcast with your host, Nate Bailey, where we look to the ancient paths of our hunting ancestors to guide our future, where woodsmanship and hard work outweigh advanced shooting devices, where we value those who have gone before us and welcome those who are yet to come. Join us as we exchange valuable insight about the Bear Bow Hunter's lifestyle. Welcome to another edition of Bear Bow Hunters Podcast, and today we're here with Luke Saturn. And Luke, I found him on Instagram, and he has LS Blades on Instagram. And I also noticed that he is a traditional bow hunter, and also just got into muzzle loading. How you doing, Luke?
Doing well. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm kind of getting ready for bear season. I've been looking all over, you know, trying to find some spots to go. So the reason I got you on here is, for one, I am thoroughly impressed with the craftsmanship that you put into the stuff that you do.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Before I pressed record here, we were talking, and I knew you were a traditional bow hunter, but I did not know that you build your own bows. So,
yeah.
So there, it kind of sounds like craftsmanship is kind of the thing that's in. Are you going to start building guns too?
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know if you've looked at some of these Facebook groups, you know, for muzzleloaders here on Facebook, but there's one, Herschel House. I don't know if you've ever heard of Herschel House, but You got to go check that group out, because those guys. So there's guys that are redoing all their. There's certain counties in Kentucky that you could tell where the rifles come from, because that's how everybody builds the rifles in that county.
Yeah.
And it's that much tradition. These guys are bringing that forward. They're even making their own barrels.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. So you need to check that out on Facebook when you get a chance. I spend way too much time over there.
Yeah, we'll do it. That sounds interesting.
Yeah. I'm big about that craftsmanship type stuff. I don't have a whole lot of it in me. I wish I did, but once I started checking out your Instagram, your big thing is really Damascus steel, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So
it's that.
Sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. So what is the, I've tried to figure it out. I think it's just because you keep folding it over on itself, and that creates the, a real dense steel. Is that why Damascus is such a cool thing?
That's why it was originally invented, back when steels weren't as refined as they are now. Now, as far as I understand it, it's more just for aesthetics. The way we do Damascus is we do two dissimilar metals. One's a high nickel steel and one's a high carbon steel, mostly. And so we stack layers of that, and then, you know, you forge weld it together, pound it out flat, cut it, stack it again until you get your desired layer count. And then you can do different things to manipulate the patterns to make them look a certain way.
Oh, wow. And so when you're doing – now, you guys – you got to run over to his Instagram and check this stuff out, because just talking about it, and you don't hear you're hearing just the audio and you're not looking at this. You got to understand that these are pretty doggone cool knives and axes. The axes are what caught my attention.
Yeah, those are fun.
Yeah, but when you're doing this, is the Damascus steel and all that, is that your main gig? Is that what you do, or are you like a welder too, or what do you do?
No. Nah. Well, I started, trying not to get too deep into this. I went to welding school about 15 or 16 years ago, and I started as a structural welder, and I've been a fabricator for, you know, that whole time. And I started working for a company as a structural welder, and they had a blacksmithing side to the business as well. And when I got the chance, I went over there, and I just kind of never looked back. And so, yeah, I'm 8 hours a day, I'm a fabricator, and then, you know, nights and weekends I'm in my shop blacksmithing.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. Because I have seen some of the stuff that you've done. You've posted on your Instagram as well, like some of the ornamental welding that you've done. Yeah. Yeah. And it's pretty cool to see. And then your blacksmithing stuff. So you got like a bunch of different tools that you keep updating. And so when I look at that, I'm going to have to come down there with my camera and take a tour and have you show me how some of the stuff works, because I really like this kind of thing, and I don't have a clue about it. So.
Yeah, most don't.
Yeah. So the mix of your metals that you make your knives out of, is there like a reason that, or have you played with that? And what's the big difference between the two metals, and why do you mix them so much?
Well, mixing the high nickel steel and then the high carbon steel, when you make your pattern, you make your knife, and then at the end of it, you etch it in ferric chloride. And when you etch it, the two different metals, they etch at different rates. And so one stays shiny and one darkens. And that's how you get the high contrast.
Gotcha. And so it's for aesthetics. The qualities of the metal, are those?
Yeah. The quality, so I just buy knife steel from a knife steel company. A lot of guys, they'll start out, you know, with railroad spikes or, you know, saw blades and stuff like that. But you can't, not knowing exactly what steel it is, you don't know what the critical temperature is for heat treating.
Right.
So I just stick to the Bowler steels and something that I can control and make sure I'm getting a good product out there and I'm not, you know, just throwing something out there that's going to snap an edge off or something.
Right. And you guys, when we're talking about this, head over to Luke's Instagram. His Instagram is LS_blades, and check out what we're talking about here, because there's some pretty cool things to take a look at over there. So now the carbons and the steel that you use, is that like a high carbon knife tool still, or?
Yeah, I mostly use 1084 right now. I've been using it since I started because it's pretty forgiving with the heat range for tempering. You can be off a little bit and it'll still get a good hard blade. That was before I got a heat treating oven. Now I'm venturing into different steels because with my heat treating oven I can control the heat and the soak time and everything. When before I was just kind of doing it by eye, you know, by the color of the steel in my forge.
Gotcha.
So yeah, now I'm going to start venturing into some other stuff and I'm going to get ready and start doing some pretty crazy pattern work. That's my plan anyways.
Gotcha. Yeah. Are you using that same kind of steel in your axes? I'm sorry, man. If I'm asking you stuff that's not,
No.
I don't know any of this. So it's really intriguing to me.
So my axes, the body of the axe, I just forge out of mild steel, and then I split the end and I forge weld in a Damascus bit to where the cutting edge is, you know, is 1084 and 15N20.
That's
when
cool.
The body is mild steel.
That's cool. Does that probably adds a little bit of strength to it, you know, to the end of it.
To the edge. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And so, a couple things that I was going to get you on here. I really wanted to get you on here so I could kind of get your knives out so people could see them, because they are that. They're that quality. I have not held one yet, but I'm going to. We've been meaning to get together and shoot either bows or our muzzle loaders, but we haven't got there yet. And but I wanted to get you on here. And when we do, I'm going to have to play with one of those knives, and I'm going to have to mess with one of the hatchets that you made, or the axes too.
For sure. Maybe I'll find some time and make you one.
Oh yeah. I would really, really love to play with one. Now the axes. So that's something that we're going to do a little bit more of this spring, is for spring bears. We're going to start packing in, but we're going to pack in, you know, past, I don't know. Do you spring bear hunt at all?
No, not really.
So, you live in a great place to spring bear hunt, by the way.
I know.
You're just outside of Merlin, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, you could go up to Galice, and, man, all that over there just is full of bears.
Pretty prime, huh?
Yeah, it is.
I'm pretty focused on turkey and that stuff in the spring.
Yeah, yeah, yep. And you hunt turkeys with your bows?
Yep.
And
sure
what
do.
What bows are those? Are they long bows or recurves?
I do a reflex deflex.
Okay, so you got a reflex deflex recurve, yep. Or I mean longbow.
Yep.
I shoot. That's what I shoot too. I shoot one of Allen's.
I love them.
Yeah, it's a. I do too. They're just smooth and mellow, and I have for years. I shot Wade's bows, Wade Morris's recurve, and I love those bows too. I think they have their trade offs. Everything's got a trade off, but cool. So you hunt turkeys around your place, or do you have places down there where you hunt them?
I got a couple of properties. I actually I got permission on a place out in Cheney Creek where I hunt a little bit, but that kind of fell through last year, so I didn't have a place to hunt, and I put out an ad on Craigslist for anybody wanting to get rid of nuisance turkeys.
Tech tip.
I needed a property, man.
Yeah, and it worked out, huh?
It did. I got a place out in Cave Junction, but man, it was, I mean, first morning I had 50 birds around
me. Oh, right on.
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's, man, I turkey hunt too, and I guide a lot of turkey hunters, and I love turkey hunting. The coolest thing about it is how vocal they are.
Oh yeah.
But I'm probably going to do more bear hunting this year just because, like I was saying, we're looking at Gage and I, my son, we're looking at maybe packing in past some of those snow drifts in the high, mm-hmm. you know, and getting up in that grass when the bears are first coming out.
Yep.
And then that's why I was saying that having an axe would be cool because we're going to have like a little wood stove with our teepee tents and going to pack all that in. So.
Oh, yeah. You guys are going all out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's something that I've always wanted to do, and I elk hunt up there. But you can't get up there a lot of times during bear season when the grass starts coming out because the roads are just still, you know, snowed in.
Drifted.
Yeah. But so we're looking to do that.
Cool. But,
So with the, you got any turkey land figured out? Are you going out to Merlin again? Merlin, out to Cave Junction?
Cave Junction, probably. I might actually throw out another ad and see if I can get a place that's closer. Because, I mean,
yeah, it's a little ways
get out
there.
And get it, get set up before it's light, man. You got to wake up early for that.
Yeah. So are you calling them and decoying them and all that? Or
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Spot and stock? I don't know what it is. A lot of guys around here aren't that into turkey hunting, man, but it's that. It's like a high school love triangle, you know. you and the birds, man. You get them interested, and you just shut up and give them the cold treatment or the silent treatment.
Right.
It's a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, no, I do a lot of turkey hunting too, and it's the same thing. You know, guys are like, "You turkey hunting?" And I'm like, "Guys, it's not the turkeys. It's not like the ones that you're hunting, you know, in your backyard. You know how some of those turkeys can be." It's not like that. Although I'll go shoot one of those just to get a turkey. but it's when you get out and get some of the stuff. Some of these turkeys are, I mean, they're harder to work than an elk sometimes. And
they are.
Yeah, it's just crazy. So, what's your favorite kind of calling? Do you use like diaphragms or do you use box calls or?
I use a slate mostly. I've been trying every, you know, right before spring every year. I dust off the diaphragm and try to teach myself a little more and a little more, but I'm just not confident with it yet.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, with your longbow, you know, a diaphragm call is nice because you can actually have it in your mouth and still making calls as you're drawing. And I use a diaphragm a lot for that.
Yeah. I wish I could get to that point. Maybe I get some pointers from you sometime because it's not working out for me.
Yeah, sometimes it's the calls too. I mean,
yeah,
there's some calls out there that are really hard to get to work, and some that are easier, and then some are easy for one guy and harder for another. So sometimes it's calls. Yeah, it's just switching calls will do it sometimes. But I've been turkey calling, man. We used to do it back in the 2000s up here where I live in Butte Falls. That's where I hunted turkeys. And we called in birds up here, and I tell you what, these birds are like, they're like the Super Bowl of turkeys because it's all, you know, it's all on public land, and it's all, they get hunted by coyotes and cougars and stuff all the time. So you got to be on your A game to kill these birds.
Oh yeah. They're wary.
Oh yeah. And it's fun though. I really dig turkey hunting, and I love chasing them. Throughout the day. And it's one of those things where we call and then set up, try to get in front of them and set up and let them come to us. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, I wake up super early, you know, out there before dawn and everything, and I always end up shooting a bird at like 11 o'clock.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the things, that's a tip for turkey people that aren't, you know, that haven't hunted turkeys before. I think they're more active when the sun's up.
Oh, yeah.
And you, you know, unless you're shooting them off the roost, they are out picking around all day long, just like a regular bird.
Yeah.
But
it seems like when on sunny days, when the sun's actually out, as opposed to cloudy days, they're more active, I found too.
Yeah, I think I found that too. You know, sometimes when it's cloudy or windy, they just kind of hole up.
Yep, just hunker down.
Yeah, now I've had that a lot too. And rainy days, I have shot a few turkeys on rainy days, but they weren't near as vocal, let's put it that way.
Yeah, not sure as miserable sitting in one spot when it's raining.
Yeah, sitting and counting ticks.
Yeah, exactly.
So, how long have you been turkey hunting here in Oregon then?
Oh, probably since 2010.
Okay.
Well, on and off. I moved away for a few years and then moved back, so.
Right, right. Yeah. And you're in Grants Pass, just Merlin, outside of Grants Pass.
Yep.
You got tons of turkeys around you there too.
Yeah, it's just hard finding, you know, up in the hills, it's so steep and so brushy.
Yeah.
Hard finding turkey spots on public land. You know, all the birds are down on the everybody's yard.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. First turkey I ever killed was in Merlin, and it wasn't a very good experience. it ran across about three different people's yards. So,
yep.
I decided then that I need to find something different than that. But there are tons of birds in there, and people want, a lot of people want them shot, but you don't know who it is.
So, I got a roost tree in my backyard. I got 25 turkeys. I got some rope draggers going through my backyard all the time.
Yeah, you're going to have to post some of those. I'd like to at least see them.
I will. I'll do that.
Yeah. Yep. You know, outside, if you go north of you too a little bit, there's a lot of good turkey hunting up there. I where we spring bear hunt, we run into turkeys up there quite a bit.
Out towards Glees?
Yeah, out towards Glees, and then even up on the other side, out towards Canyonville, up in that area too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta venture up that way. I know what's that? Glendale and Wolf Creek and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not too fond of traipsing around in the woods up there.
I hear you. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yep. Yep. I was, another thing that I was kind of wanting to talk a little bit to you about is muzzle loading. You just got into it, didn't you?
Yeah. Actually, my uncle passed away and he left me all of his guns. And one of them was a Hawken 50 cal.
Right. Right. And I think if I remember right, it was a CVA, I think.
Yeah, I think it's like Italian made. I can't remember.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you planning on doing anything with that?
I'd like to start putting in for that Applegate muzzle loader. And a friend told me about a Cascade muzzle loader that's actually not as popular. That's actually pretty productive. So I might put in for that this year.
Yeah. I think the Cascade muzzle loader tag is an elk tag, if I remember right. I know there is a Cascade.
Maybe it's
tag.
Coastal. Yeah. I don't know. I have to check that.
Oh, are you looking blacktails?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not quite an elk yet.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, elk are a whole lot easier than those blacktails.
Yeah. Yeah. You just got to get out there and pound ground and find them.
Yeah. Yeah. And once you've done that, that's the hardest part is actually finding them. But, so that goes right along with what you do. Like Herschel House, he builds knives.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to really go over and check out that stuff over. Anybody listening to this, go check out Herschel House's muzzleloading group. He's got a group. It's called Herschel House Muzzleloading. And he's really well known in the muzzleloading world.
It's on Facebook?
Yeah, it's on Facebook.
Okay.
But his knives, so he makes knives, and it's all period correct. So it's all, you know, from the time of the Revolutionary War all the way to probably the Civil War. And he'll make them muzzle loaders correct. And a lot of them are smooth bores. There's a lot of Kentucky rifles as well. But his knives, so he's starting to make a lot of knives right now because I'm not sure why he's making the knives so much, but all of them have, like, he'll make a knife that goes with his muzzleloader, and then he'll make, I'm telling you, you probably don't need to go over there and look at that stuff because you're going to be starting to do it. But I mean, they make their own locks. They make everything. So the trigger assembly, they're beating that stuff out, and it's crazy to me that, you know, what you do is crazy.
Yeah, it's the, I've found blacksmithing, it's, you have to think ahead. You have to think about, you know, what part of the part you're going to forge first, because when you forge the next part, you'll ruin the first part if you hit it in the wrong spot, and there's a lot of tricks and, you know, the little tricky tricks that you pick up from everybody, and it's just, I think it's the only thing that I've really kept interested in for, you know, that long.
Right. Right. Well, it looks like your shop is, you've gone the long haul. I mean, you're a blacksmith. That's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you just go on your Instagram and like one of the posts is the anvil that you just bought.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff is just, we just need more of that in this world. I'm telling you, being able to think ahead and do something with your hands. I don't know. There's something in the blue collar in me just loves that kind of idea.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Mainly it's cause I, want cool things and can't afford them. So I make them.
Well, with that though, you do make some knives that can help you afford other things, you know?
Oh yeah.
Guys really need to go over there and check those knives out. And you do custom work as well, right?
Yeah. 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 I just got done with a, fire poker set. Before that, I did a bunch of forged strapping for big open beam gables on the exterior of a house. Do lots of handrails, you know, stuff like that.
Right. Right. Now on your axes, did you make the handles for those as well?
I did. Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's pretty cool. You did everything. Did you make the leather covers?
Yeah, I do. I don't know why, man, but I always get involved with the lost arts. I do a lot of leather working, leather tooling and everything too. Do all my showing sheets and everything.
You know what you need? Do you have a website?
I do.
Oh, I didn't know you did.
Yeah, it's just lsblades.com. It's pretty terrible. I'm not really too happy with it right now, but it's there.
Yeah. I really need to come down and just kind of do a tour and make a video of it, because it's just so, if you guys, anybody that likes any kind of trade or anything like that, or likes the traditions of things, it's guys like this that are keeping this stuff alive. And you really got to go check this stuff out, because there's so, just like the way that you split the steel and then added other steel to it. I mean, that's just, that stuff's not something that a lot of people know how to do anymore.
No, it's sorcery.
It is, to a point. It's like a mix between science and art, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
What, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
I'm 36.
36. So how long have you been at this?
I graduated welding school in 2005, so 16 years.
Wow. Wow. How long have you been at blacksmithing?
14 years.
Wow. Yeah. So if you guys, do you use your own knives? Do you have your own knives? You have to have your own set.
I don't carry my own knife every day. I actually, I like to support the local knife makers and stuff. And I actually have I'll throw him a plug, Trinity Edge Knives. He's in Medford and he makes some great folders.
Oh,
and
wow.
I carry one of his folders. I love it.
Oh, right on. Right on. So, what is this? So I was just looking on your Instagram here. You have a spade looking, is that like a,
it's a cake serving tool.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? Somebody come to you and say, hey, I need a cake knife and I need it in Damascus steel.
Yep.
And it needs to look burly.
And that was for their wedding, so they're gonna, you know, cut their wedding cake with that.
That's you must know some cool people that want to have a wedding cake with a cutter like that.
Yeah, I know, right? Guess I'm just lucky.
So, and you build all of your own handles as well?
Yep, I was using yew wood for a long time. I harvested a tree a few years ago and had it milled up, and you know, let it weather or dry out, and I was gonna make some bows out of it, and I made a couple self bows out of it, but then I started using it for hammer handles.
Right.
And it was supposed to be good, but they're not great. So I actually found a local source for hickory, which is kind of hard to track down, and been making all my handles out of hickory and have a lot better success with it.
Yeah, yew wood's nice and everything, but I imagine after a while on the handle of it, next to steel, it probably broke up a little bit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually dabbled into making my own bows before, self bows, and my first one was a hickory bow, and it probably pulled about 100, 110 pounds by the time I was done, and yeah. I was afraid to take it down any further, and the string follow on that thing was horrible, and I bet you it shot a whole 120 feet per second.
Yeah.
And then... No, yeah, oh yeah,
they're not efficient.
No, and it's the guy doing it, you know. And then I learned real quick. You could make a durable bow, real easy, and you can make a fast bow real easy. But making a fast durable bow, that takes some art.
That's the kicker. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then I made a yew wood bow. We got a lot of yew wood around us. And I made a yew wood bow. And that thing was smoking. I mean, it would shoot, and it shot really, really good for about 20 shots.
Yeah.
So that's been my bow making. I always wanted to get back into it. And then moving back up here, I hunt around yew wood trees all the time. And so I am going to get back into it. You know, I got all the traditional Boyer's Bibles, and I have all that stuff. So I really would like to do it. I just haven't done it yet.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm always looking for those when I'm out in the woods. Those yew wood trees, you got to find one that's straight with no limbs for about, you know, 6 or 7 feet, and they're kind of hard to come by. Right tree.
Yeah, and no twist. I mean, you can find a straight one, and then all of a sudden it's got so much twist in it. There's nothing you could do with it either.
Yeah,
and you know, up here too. Another thing that I've learned by just, you know, osmosis by listening to people, is with the yew wood. You want to get those high mountain yew woods with the tight rings.
Yep.
Stuff that doesn't grow very fast.
Oh yeah, that's a slow growing tree, man. I cut one down that was probably about 6 or 7 inches in diameter, and I counted the rings, and it was like 130 years old.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah, they're slow growing.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, there for a while, yew wood was really watched in our neck of the woods, cuz there was something in the bark. And that was the only thing that they could use for a certain cancer treatment.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So that people were just cutting them down and selling the bark. And, and so they have a permitting system now. And if you go to the Forest Service, you could go to the High Cascade Forest Service in Prospect and get a permit. And they do it it's one tree a year. So you pick your tree, but that's a lot of wood. That's a lot of yew wood, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
you go up and grab one. I just haven't done it again, but I really wanted to.
Yeah, a lot of times they're in a riparian zone too, so you can't touch them. Mm-hmm. You got to find those ones up in the mountains, yeah, like you're talking about.
Yeah, and a lot of the ones that I find that are, you know, quality bow wood is there's a bunch of stuff that they went through here probably about 30 years ago, and they thinned, they partial cutted a section of trees in there, and they left all the yew. So all those, yeah, so all those trees, and then they left, you know, dug fir about every, probably 16, it's a beautiful forest. The way they did it, it just cleaned it up really nice, but they left those yew wood trees, then were able to get to that sunlight, so there's a lot of straight ones in there. It's
really?
Yeah, yeah, one of these days, maybe we'll have to get you up there and let you take a look at them.
Yeah, you got my gears turning on that one.
Yeah, you know, Wade Morris has been after me, and I got a sawmill, too, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
You're my new best friend.
I don't have it over here yet. It's over at Mom and Dad's, but Wade Morris has been after me, getting some yew wood to build some bows. He wants to build some bows, too, and I imagine if I got some going, Alan would take some, too, and it'd be kind of cool to find one that, you know, an elk had rubbed on and then send that to him and then have them build a bow and then call it revenge.
There you go.
But so what are you're looking, turkey hunting's pretty much your plan for this year?
Yeah, I mean, 10 minutes after I shoot a deer, I'm already thinking about turkeys. So
really,
you know, it's that winter is the slow time. So kind of getting ready for turkeys, and that's what's on my mind right now. But you know, summer comes around, I start thinking about deer again.
Right. Right.
And, we found some new high country this year to hunt blacktails in, and, we're trying to gear up to do some overnighters,
right?
And, you know, pack in, get off the roads, get away from people, and having a hard time finding a pack that'll fit me. But
really,
yeah, I'm not a small individual.
Well, I know, but I could probably help you out there. I know some people that in the pack industry that those guys are pretty. They have some frames that are really, really, really easy to adjust. There's a lot of adjustment in them.
Yeah,
so
I'll hit you up on that, because I'm coming up with nothing, honestly.
Yeah, check out Wilderness Packs.
Okay,
we'll do. Yeah, check out Wilderness Packs. They're on Instagram, and give them a call up there and they'll be able to walk you through a lot of different things. And they're 100% American made. Mm-hmm. And they're really affordable. Really affordable. Really? Yep.
Good. I'm not trying to break the bank.
No, these are, you know, yeah, because you could, man, for a good American pack, you could spend some money, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, they're like a couple knives affordable for you, is basically what they are. Yep.
That's the way I think about things, too.
Yeah. So, but yeah, check them out. Now, and you're rifle hunting this year, right?
Yeah, for deer, yeah. I just got into a... Just bought a nice rifle and been getting into some long range shooting. So it's kind of my new hobby.
So
although right now I can't do it because ammo is so expensive.
Oh, I know, you don't want to waste it. But so you're all spectrums here. You're shooting turkeys with the trad bows that you made, and then your long range rifle shooting. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Yep, I'm with you. I do most of my hunting is with my bow, of course.
Yeah.
But I do see that, and we are going to have, my son just bought a rifle, and he wants to spring bear hunt in the clear cuts. So that usually is a long range thing. For us, a long range is like 400 yards.
Yeah.
But. For some people it's not. I have a buddy lives down in your neck of the woods, Sage at Chasing Moby. And I don't remember what the last one they shot was, but it was out there. And, he shoots a lot of bears in the year and, really helps the deer populations in the areas he goes. And he gives us a lot of good pepperoni too. So,
The Sportsman's Park out here, the rifle range goes out to, the big bore range goes out to 600 yards. I've been working at 5 and 6 quite a bit.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for those of you listening to the podcast that are barebow hunters and are like, long rifles, understand that some of these areas out here kind of lend themselves to that as far as some of these blacktail areas. Same with the bears. The bears especially because of... And I've tried sneaking on bears in the clear cuts, and the problem with it is I don't know if you've spring bear hunted, but they come out really early and really late and go back in. And so you'll see a bear real late, and then you try to put a stalk on it, man. You got to move to get to them.
Yeah, there ain't no moving up here, man.
Yeah.
It's slow.
Oh, it's slow. And by the time you get down, if you're thinking you're going to stalk one with your bow, by the time you get down there, it's dark. You know, you're not going to get a shot. So that's why a lot of guys are going to the long range rifles for bear hunting here. And it's a lot of predator control. It's conservation really on our part because I know a lot of guys are listening to this right now and going, man, really, bears? You guys got that many? I've sat in a clear cut and watched 4 different bears in the clear cut before.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's right here. Just outside of Medford, you know, and you start going down your neck of the woods and then start going towards the coast from there, there's just so many. Cape Junction is just plumb full of bears.
Oh, yeah. Where I grew up was pretty berry. Yeah, it's down farther towards the coast.
Yeah, you're in Gasky, right?
Yep.
So Gasky's, I was actually stationed in Brookings. I was in Brookings for quite a while, so I was up through Gasky quite a bit.
Yeah.
Always thought it was a cool town.
Wide spot in the highway, pretty much.
Yeah, but it seemed like every house was like a cabin in the redwoods.
Yeah.
It seemed like every house also had moss growing on it there.
Yeah, they don't see much sun.
Yeah, and a lot of rain.
Yep.
But no, that's cool. I'm really interested to see how so if you like long range, you probably should get into spring bear hunting. You really need to get into that because it would cost you nothing to do. It's like right in your back door. And then if you like long range, that would be the perfect thing to do.
Yeah. No, yeah. I try to pick and choose, you know, that unfortunately right now, because I'm just focused so hard on growing my business,
right?
You know, between work and other work, you know, and then family too, of course,
family
is very, very important.
Yeah.
And so, if I do get more time in the future, it's something that's on my list for sure.
Right. So, speaking of growing your business, guys, run over and check out your website, and it's LS Blades is your website. Okay. And LS _ Blades on Instagram. And, you guys if you guys want American built things with American hands and a guy that, you just heard he could do everything from shooting long range down to shooting turkeys with a boat. Do you build your own arrows as well?
Nope. Haven't gone down that rabbit hole yet.
Oh yeah. You don't want to get started. Get started in too much of this stuff. You're going to be busy. You're not going to be able to keep up with any of it.
Yeah.
But, so that's one of the reasons that I really wanted to get you on the podcast is because I really believe in American-made stuff with American-made hands. We with the Life Outdoors and Barebow Hunters really try to present that to whatever we're doing too, because we believe in it.
Oh yeah.
And especially guys here in Oregon, you know, I don't know, guys everywhere really, but guys here in Oregon, it's just cool to get that in front of people so they could actually, when you hold something like that rather than something that's made in a factory, it's just a whole different, it's a whole different thing.
It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can make it to whatever you want too, as far as like your hand and things like that.
Oh yeah. That's kind of why I started building longbows, is because I have such a long draw length.
What's your draw length?
I'm 32 and a half.
Oh, wow. So you can shoot a monster arrow and still get a ton of penetration.
Yeah. I was shooting compound. I started shooting archery when I was about 8, and my dad got into it with me. We started shooting a lot of 3D tournaments and stuff. Uh-huh. And as I grew, it's hard to find a bow that's got that long of a draw length compound. So I was shooting, you know, a bow that was 31 inches,
right?
You know, with a 32 and a half inch draw length. You know, you just break your bow arm a little bit and bring it closer to your face. But so I just, decided to just build my own and start doing that.
Right on. And yeah, that's pretty cool. Then, and with that kind of draw length, getting arrows is kind of a pain sometimes too, I'd imagine.
Nope. We get them full length and don't got to cut them down.
You just don't even touch them. You just run them full length.
Glue in inserts and go.
Yeah. You know, you got a really good arrow maker down in your neck of the woods too. It used to be called Rogue River Archery. But now they're Wapiti Archery, and they use all Port Orford cedar from the coast there.
Wapiti's still going?
Yeah. Yep, last I knew.
They used to be on Redwood Avenue. They had that shop, and since they closed down, I thought they were done.
No. So he's still building wood arrows. They, as far as the shop itself, I don't know if it's still running, but I know that he's still building the shafts. He's still building those Port Orford cedar.
Yep.
And that was from Paula and Cecil back in the day. When I first started bow hunting, that's all I ran were cedar shafts. And that was back in 90s. but Paul and Cecil owned that, and it was called Rogue River Archery. And they were very well known in the shaft world. You know, they were up there with Rose City. So
yeah, that's where I was getting all my wood. I was doing Rose City.
Yeah, yep, yep. And Rose City's a good shaft too. You know, and there's a bunch in Oregon. Actually, we have a lot of good shaft makers here. But
it's because we got the Port Orphan Cedar.
Yeah, that's it. Well, you know, and up north they're making it out of Douglas fir.
Yeah, that's Sherwood. Because all the old growth Port Orford cedar is gone.
Yeah, and you can't just use any Port Orford cedar either, you know?
Yeah.
You have a lot of it they were getting over there was off of one ranch, and it was burnt.
Yep.
So, no, that's cool. That's cool that we got all this around us, and I kind of wanted to let everybody know about that. So.
Yeah.
Right on, man. Well, I'm going to let you get going. I know how busy you are. I know you're in the shop right now. So
yep.
working on getting some knives and stuff out.
Yep.
If you'll allow me, I'm going to come down and videotape and show people what you do there and kind of show them how you do that.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Yeah. It'd be fun to put that on the YouTube channel. I think people would really enjoy it. I would enjoy shooting it. And if I'm going to enjoy shooting it, then I'll edit it out and put it on YouTube. And if nobody else wants to watch, that's their business, but I want to do it. So
perfect.
All right, Luke, thanks, man. We're going to get together one of these days. I promise.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Nate.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another installment of the Barebow Hunter podcast. Remember, we couldn't even be talking about this stuff if it wasn't for our public land. So go and support the people that are protecting it, backcountry hunters and anglers and TRCP. Also, if you'd like to see more of Barebow Hunters, go to our Facebook group, go to our Instagram at Barebow Hunters, like us, and hashtag all of your photos with your Barebow goodness in them, Barebow Hunter. We have a website as well. You can go over there, check out the rest of the podcast. We have videos, we have t-shirts and hats. Thanks again. Until then, shoot straight.